Welcome to this month's episode of Half Hour Call, where Carl Dunnington, Open Drama UK's champion for Dorset, is in conversation with Kerry Frampton from Splendid. There is definitely some magic in the air during this conversation, where Kerry talks with honesty, warmth and humour about her significant moment of choice, which shaped the Splendid productions we know today. Kerry shares hot off the press news and updates for what's coming up for Splendid as they celebrate 20 years in 2023.
Hello, I'm Carl Dunnington and this is Open Drama Half Hour Call. And I'm here today with Kerry Frampton from Splendid Theatre. Kerry, how are you?
Hey, I'm all right, you know. I'm sat in my cheeky premiere inn in the middle of Southampton.
Is this what you're used to, Kerry?
Yeah, I mean, this is a little upgrade. We used to do quite a lot of travel lodge, but today I've treated myself.
You certainly have. Kerry, we've known each other for a while now. You've come and done a lot of stuff with our students over the last number of years. But where did it all start for you, Kerry? Let's take you back to little Kerry, many moons ago. Can you remember the first experiences of going to see a theatre or drama? Can you remember those?
Because I'm a working class person, so we didn't really go to the theatre outside of Panto every year. So I would go to the yearly panto at Southampton that was the Gaumont, that's now the Mayflower. That was sort of it, really. I did tap dancing shows in a very basic way. Apart from that, like, theatre felt like a very different, like potentially something that wasn't necessarily for us. Like, it didn't feel like something that I would necessarily go to. And then weirdly at primary school, I had a teacher, maybe when I was 8, called Mr. Foster. And Mr. Foster was old, kind of Welsh, very ruddy-faced man. And he took our primary school, his little primary school in Eastleigh, which is a sort of railway town. He took us all to see the Mikado at Southampton Guildhall. And I cried because I'd never seen anything so beautiful. Like, I didn't know that it could be like that. And I sort of didn't really understand what it was that I loved about it, but it was visually really kind of sumptuous and funny and engaging. And I think I just sort of fell in love with it. We didn't do drama at school. They did like a musical every year, but that was run by the music and English department. And I was only ever chorus. Like, I wasn't a star or anything, very, very much the opposite. I tried hard. That was probably on my school reports, like, she tries hard. And then it wasn't really until I went to sixth form at Barton Peveril in Eastleigh. So I just went to a brand new sixth form college. And I finally found my people. And I think there is something very special in that moment where you find your tribe. And I found like a group of sort of misfits from various different backgrounds who just loved it. And we lived in each other's pockets. We would do like this thing called lunchbox theatre. And every lunch there would be like people trying stuff out, or people, you could come and bring your lunch and watch some theatre or put like a scene on. And it was genuinely like a progressive and created a level of sort of, and you see it sometimes, and I know that there has been a managed decline governmentally to drama departments up and down the country, which is an endless heartbreak. But like, when drama departments still manage, and they're still there, I bet loads of the open drama people are running them or trying to facilitate this similar space, a space where you feel like you're safe, where you can experiment, where you can try different versions of who you are, where you get a chance to be empathic, where you get a chance to be brave, where you get a chance to be just foolish, and you're entirely held like a little family. And that's what I had. Like it was and I think maybe you don't really realize that until you've left it. And but I you know, I know because I go into these spaces where you understand that this is a little bit of magic that is for these A-level students. There is something magic in the air, and maybe they won't realize it until they've left. And you know that as a drama teacher, you get sort of special year groups or special cohorts, and it just feels like they're cohesive and kind to one another and supportive. Or maybe they start year 12 sort of bickery, like, and then they find their place. They find their space together. So I had that. And then basically my plan was, how can I leave Eastleigh as quickly as possible? So I mean, theoretically what I was good at was art. Like I try hard at drama, but what I was good at was art. So probably should have done the foundation in art, but that meant being in Winchester and that meant not escaping easily. So what I did was I went, did a drama degree, and I was very fortunate in that I, because as a someone from a poor background, there's no way I could have gone to university now. Like there's just not at all a waste. But so luckily I was, we were still being funded. So I did a theatre degree at Bretton Hall, which was again a place that facilitated play, interdisciplinary work. So I was working with the dance students, contemporary music, straight up music. There was even like weird collabs with ceramicists and fine artists. And there was also a tech course. So you would be on campus like 12 hours a day, you're bussed in, you're bussed out. And during those 12 hours, you could be, there's your lessons, there's the pieces that you're working on, but in amongst that, you are collaborating with all sorts of people, which means that Bretton is a sort of very special place because people come out of there, either incredible drama teachers, there's loads of Bretton drama teachers, loads of people from my year group are now like just magnificent drama teachers. Or you get like a few years above us with the League of Gentlemen. So you get that kind of anarchic, sort of playful, dark humour. Wayne McGregor was a Bretton student. Again, really interesting sort of choreography, which I think can only come from a place where there isn't much interference.
You talked about being a misfit. Do you still see yourself as a misfit? And is it a nice thing to be a misfit? Or
do you know what I think is really useful about Splendid? So we're not in the mainstream. We're not funded. So unlike our contemporaries who you might study on amongst GCSE work, like we get no funding whatsoever, but that does mean that we are able to pick and choose what we do and how we do it. It means that we have to be very strategic with the way that we work, but it also means that no one has that kind of overall power over what we do and the content that we make. I don't know if I feel like a misfit. I don't know if I could work in a school institution because my very instinct is to prod and mess with authority. Just when people use power in an interesting way, and I think within schools, everyone will have an experience of, be it now or in the past, of schools being places where power is not necessarily used well. And I would be a pain in the ass in a school system. So again, I guess not misfit, but maybe there's sort of something lovely about being on the outside and coming in, which I really enjoy. I really enjoy, this September has been, I'm basically every day workshop leading at a different school somewhere else in the country. So I'm on like a kind of weird workshop tour, and it's a pleasure to go in to meet young people, to form a connection with young people and try and kind of empower them, tool them up, give them as much theory, but in a practical, digestible form as possible, so that they can then use it in their own work. And really, I think that's with Splendid, that's mostly my aim, is that our job is to sort of go in and encourage young people to have an autonomy of their work, to feel powerful, to feel brave, to look after each other. The power that there is in being a young person, there's flipping loads of them. There is a reason why they don't have the vote. Right? It's always in someone's interest to keep young people feeling disengaged or not powerful or not political or not part of the system. So I guess with Splendid, combining a selection of my sort of passions, which is to make complex things straightforward, which is mostly about dense theory and practical, so that we're doing it rather than reading about it. The next one is to find joy and collectivism and things that are universal, and looking after each other, looking out for each other. And then there's a sort of mischief.
So this mischief, this ability to go into a space that you've never been to before, work with young people you've never been with before. When you started out with Splendid, was that one of the sort of your reason to be? Was that your raison d'etre at the time? How did Splendid start in your head?
So a year out of Breton, I accidentally got pregnant. So at the age of, on my 22nd birthday, so by the time I was 22, I had a baby. And it sort of changed. So I was still doing sort of professional acting work. I wanted to be an actor. I wanted to be a working actor. But once I had my daughter, it totally changed. Mostly, do you know what it changed? It changed my perception of myself. Because as she got bigger and bigger, and I made a formidable, remarkable young person. And I just started to have to, I wasn't massively ambitious for myself, but I started to have to be a kind of like optimum version of myself for her. And I think as anyone who's balancing raising children alongside working, it's complicated and hard. And I think they got to a point where I was working for English Touring Theatre. So I got a job. I answered a job in The Guardian, job pages. And I got a job working for English Touring Theatre. And they used to run this scheme called Practitioners Unplugged. And it was basically, when I went there, we upped it to like 10 practitioners. So it was a 3-hour practical workshop. And that's where I learned my trade, really. So I had a really excellent team, really excellent mentor. And I toured with them, and then I did workshops accompanying some of their shows. And then it got to a point where I was like, I think there's a gap in the market. So one, I thought there was a gap in the market for extension sessions, for practitioner sessions, but bespoke practitioner sessions. So we would go in and deliver, if you wanted a Stanislavski workshop, it would be the same workshop using the same bit of text. That was the workshop. I think there are plenty of companies, I think if you've seen one of their workshops, you could probably deliver their workshop if you also had like the accompanying book. Whereas I was like, well, if that school is looking at a doll's house, there's no reason why we could take all of these techniques and apply it to a doll's house. So it's just because drama departments don't have very much money. So if you're going to get a workshop in, how much can we make it fit the needs and requirements? So that was my first thought. And the second thought was, no one's looking at devising. And for me, I was a theatre maker, and that was part of the training.
So it started with the workshops. When did the putting on the actual shows start? How did that develop?
So I did a business course. I did a business course for a year at the Albany in Deptford in Southeast London. And then the first first year of business, I advertised through ETT, English Touring Theatre, and they advertised my workshops alongside their workshops. So devising and extension practitioner workshops. It didn't quite work out. And so Splendid sort of came out from under the wing of English Touring Theatre, and we decided to do our first show. And if I'm being honest, what happened was one of my teachers that was doing a workshop, I was doing a break session, and she asked me, it was in Reading, she asked me if there was anyone who was going to be performing in a Brechtian style. And I said, oh, well, that's something that we're going to do. And I said, if we do it, what play would you like to see? Not if we do it, what play would you like to see? And she said, well, we've just recently taken our a group up to Glasgow to see Resistible Rise of Arturo Uhy. I would love to see that. And I was like, that is remarkable, because that is what we're doing. And then I worked out how to do that. So I think
so it was that moment. That was almost like
it was a moment. In Brechtian terminology, it would be the nodal point, the moment of choice. So she could have said, do you know anyone? And I could have gone, no. Or, but in that moment, I was like, yes, it's us.
Yeah.
But I think it's quite a good technique for students, which is like, tell someone you're going to do something. Then you sort of, you end up having to do it if you tell enough people. So that's
was it scary? Did. Was it scary that first?
No, I literally was like, I think I've got this. And I knew a group, you know, like it wasn't just me. It was, we've always Splendid were like a little family. We've got like really a good kind of good core group of people who feel the same about making theatre for young people. So all of Splendid's work is underpinned by what is it doing for young people. And the workshopping and the performance element, the workshopping is not an add-on. It's not a thing that gets us funding. It is central to who we are and what we do. And when we're making work, we make a work with that 14 to 21 year old audience at its heart. What do we want to get them to think about? So that's at the core of what we do. So yeah, Splendid, we started in 2003. So next year is our 20th anniversary.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's a sort of weird little series of, as it always is, right? No journey is a linear, it's no. Never linear. It's always sort of these little moments that become important. But I always wanted to work with young people. I love young audiences. Your work has to be on point. I sometimes when I go to the theatre, I'm like, this wouldn't get through 10 minutes in front of 400 year 10s who are there for a bronze arts award in a gym. Do you know what I mean? Like, does it hold up?
Yeah.
If we're like going, oh, aren't the lights nice?
Yeah.
I can't help thinking, well, that's then about the tech and the lighting rather than the content of the theatre on stage.
The students
can't replicate that.
They're a tough crowd.
Yeah, rightly so, because theatre should be better. Otherwise, why don't we just watch a film? Because film's really good. Film can transport us. Music can transport us. Like a good book can transport us. Theatre has to own, it has to do what it, you know, what does theatre do that no other art form can do? Let's work from that. And because my background is inclusive, that doesn't make you feel stupid, is intelligent, is current, is smart, has a sense of like danger. There's the Japanese actor Yoshio Ida, actor, writer, genius, Yoda of theatre. He says, he's got this quote and it's so good, that all theatre should contain a sense of danger. Like danger is like the essence of theatre. Even if it's in a naturalistic play, it shouldn't be so technically slick that there isn't room for something potentially going wrong. Like, we want that edge.
I think you say in your workshop, I think I'll call you saying that the stakes are high. The stakes are always high.
Yeah, you have to. But I mean, that includes not just the content of the work, but to see a group of people being present with another group of people I mean, I would describe our work as with an audience. Like, the audience complete a splendid show. It can't happen without the audience, because the audience have got a part to play. And if we're doing our job, you know, it's like the audience should feel held and safe enough to come with us and take some risks along the way.
Have you ever done any maths to work out how many schools you've visited in the last 19 years?
So I reckon pre-COVID, so, you know, at the moment, people are still tentatively getting us in, and we're not touring a show this year because it's still financially a little bit precarious for us.
Yeah.
But on average, we meet about 15,000 students a year. We tour all over the world. So every splendid show that we do a UK tour for the last 7 years has then gone on a Southeast Asia tour. We go to over 300 schools, like internationally. And then alongside that, because you can license our scripts, so you can perform our plays, you can access our streaming, like we've got a lot of, and our mind maps, all of that stuff, all of our resources basically keep us afloat. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. If anyone is buying any of our stuff, I'm so grateful. And I hope that it is useful to you. But it means
I bought your stuff before I even met you, Kerry, because my first experience of you was watching your Wojciech.
Wojciech's a banger.
But before we met, and I was doing I had an A-level class of two boys.
Oh, Lord.
And Wojciech was their set text.
Yeah.
And they had to come up with their own concept for it. And I managed to find your DVD by literally Googling and seeing Splendid Theatres Wojciech, right.
Yeah.
Buy that, have a look, see what that's like. Because Wojciech was this play that was very obscure, and we couldn't find anything on it. We found an old, really strange German movie that the boys just couldn't. And then we watched your production, and the boys and I were just like, oh yes, this is it. We must have watched that production about 10 times during that year. And the boys were so inspired by it. And I thought, Splendid Theatre, I've got to find out more about these guys. You've been on a long journey the last 19 years, and you've been to a lot of places. What we want to know is the funny stories, Kerry. We need like when something really badly wrong. Or
I mean, the thing is, because I'm a clown, so like when things go wrong, there is nothing better. But I mean, mostly the stuff that goes wrong is the stuff that makes that show really, really special.
Yeah.
So often it will be to do with lost property. So we'll have left when Everyman was endless, because it was just. Because all three, like, we had a very lovely tour with Everyman. Everyman's one of my favourite, one of our shows. But we left our shoes, all of our shoes, at the previous school in the morning. And so then all had to perform in our socks. One of our team's belt broke. So we had to borrow a belt from, this was in Richmond in North Yorkshire. So one of the actors wore a Batman belt. For the whole, like, do you remember the sort of late 2000s giant sort of belt?
Oh, proper big, yeah.
Yeah, it was massive. So he was wearing that. And just went, just things, things
did it have the equipment that you could climb up the buildings as well, that didn't have that?
No, I would have loved it. I would have loved it. But also, just, you know, I remember early doors, we took Uwe to Dane Court Grammar in Broadstairs, which my excellent friend Dan is in charge of now, and all the heating broke, and they were like, well, we don't think we can perform it, but they sent the students home in the morning to come back with duvets and like blankets. So we just did it, but we were all just wearing, like, the whole audience was covered in like blankets and duvets and sleeping bags and hot water bottles, so that we were able to do the show.
Wow.
We did a show at Rodine, like when we were first touring Wojciech, and it was it was like Children in Need Day. So sometimes we do shows where our entire audience is in fancy dress.
Brilliant.
But it's that stuff really. And I mean, touring is an endless, like, it's hot, like Working for Splendid is hard because you're doing two shows a day, two workshops a day. Mm-hmm. It's a long old day. And for quite a lot of, it's why we can't hire, it's very rare we hire straight up actors, because there's no glamour in it.
No.
There's no glamour in it.
So it's nice when a day is different, when you have a day like,
yeah, when there's
when
chaos.
You turn up at school and they're all in fancy dress.
Yeah,
or
yeah, it's gorgeous.
You turn up at school and all wrapped in blankets.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. Or some precocious child has ordered pizza midway through the show that gets delivered. Or the endless times where you're having to do a fire drill mid-show in your costume. Right, and so if any of you have seen,
I've done a fire drill where all my kids were in drama costumes. They were all in Greek togas.
Yeah. Yeah,
hacking down with rain.
Oh God, it's like a terrible Freshers Week. Oh, it's just it's Freshers Week gone wrong, but for children, it's awful.
So
it's just normal school. It's normal school day stuff, or cleaners coming in mid-show, or you know.
Yeah.
But personally, that's my favourite thing.
Yeah.
But
that's the misfit in you. That's the mischief.
I just think it's the trickster.
Yeah.
For me, there's nothing better when it slightly goes wrong because the audience know.
And so
you feel that alive.
All that traveling, all that touring.
Mm.
This summer, you were in one space for a fixed period of time.
Yeah.
The Globes. How was that experience for the wandering performer?
Yeah, the strolling player.
Like? Yeah, the strolling player. What was it like to be in the same theatre every day for a period of time?
Also, for those that you might not know, why would you know? We had a very excellent opportunity this summer to Splendid, in collaboration with the Globe, we wrote the Globe's first ever summer family show, which was housed in the Sam Wanamaker space, which is it's a rough estimation as to what a indoor Jacobean playhouse would be. We got to luckily rehearse there. So that space was sort of territorially very much ours. And we also got to make the kind of show that would not normally go into that space. So it was anarchic and inclusive and slap and foolish and heartwarming. And it was called Midsummer Mechanicals. And the premise is that it is the Mechanicals the year after Pyramus and Thisbe. So it's the tricky second album. Bottom doesn't know what happened to him. So he's got these sort of memories, these thoughts, but he doesn't believe that they can be true. So he's written this play about a generic weaver and a fairy queen. So the first half of the play is sort of them preparing to perform the play. And by the end of the first half, they realize they've only got half the cast. And the only person that can help them is a woman. But she is, it is illegal for the woman to perform on stage. So the second half is the show with the Duke and Duchess, which is one of the audience members, two of the audience members, and then sort of trying to keep a show together. But the audience are in on it, and the audience are the people who, again, you spy a theme. The audience are the people who complete. And it was very nice to see you there, Carl.
Yes, and my daughter enjoyed you more than CBeebies, and that is...
Well, that is something.
You should have put that on the posters, better
I
than
swear
CBeebies.
To God. Right, because Mr. Tumble was in the CBeebies, As You Like It.
He was, yeah.
Oh, look.
She enjoyed your show more.
That is high praise.
That is high praise. So... what's next, Kerry? What's next for Splendid?
So, now for Splendid, it's a bit... So, for me, Kerry Frampton, And really sort of am splendid, really. But I'm about to, I'm just doing lots of directing. So I'm directing our version of Macbeth at Lambda with the MFA actors, which is the 2-year acting program, postgrad program. So that's, and then I'm directing the Christmas show at the Battersea Arts Centre in London with our long-term collaborators, the Sleeping Trees. And then hopefully in the spring, we might bring back Ubu for like a little bit of time. And I don't know, hope we can take it to Southeast Asia. So wow, that's the plan for that. I've also got a very, I've got a show that I've made with my daughter, which is probably like an A-level show because of its title. I Love You, But Off.
Mm-hmm.
Which is about, it's an autobiographical show. So it's a mother and daughter show, but it's also about relationships between mothers and daughters, but also how the people that we love the most are also the most annoying.
So will you perform that together?
Yeah, so we did pre-lockdown, we did like a kind of testy out 3 shows at the Vaults Festival. And then we did it earlier this year at Camden People's Theatre for Calm Down Dear Festival. So there are some select schools that we're going to do that for, because obviously it's not something, it's quite a personal thing and it needs to be sort of treated very carefully. So we're going to do a little mini tour of that. And then potentially Mechanicals will happen again in the summer. Okay. That's another potential offer. Mm. But my big plan is that we do a 20th anniversary show for Splendid, and I'm currently working on a version of the Government Inspector.
Fantastic. So
freehand a version of the Government Inspector. And on the side, and this is like a super duper plan that I've had for a long time, but I have never had enough time to kind of think about it and execute it, I would like to create a social political theatre festival for young people.
Wow.
That's similar to how Shakespeare's Schools Festival run, but maybe in a smaller scale. But that encourages young devisors to bring their social political work together and share it.
That would be amazing. That's such a
wonderful I think it would be really, really cool.
And in January, Kerry, you're going to be doing some workshops for us.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
So Open Drama in partnership with the Masked Theatre in Southampton are going to be holding a drama teacher conference, which we're very excited about. More information is going to be coming very soon.
Mm-hmm.
Kerry has agreed to do some workshops for us on the day, and we've asked Kerry to look at devising and look at starting devising with our Year 10 GCSE students. So,
yeah.
What you're thinking of doing, Kerry?
Well, so September mostly has been running these sessions.
Mm.
So I think that it seems to be kind of structuring, kickstarting potential frameworks and offers. Basically, I want to fill it full of techniques and offers and things that might be just options for approaching stimuli in a different way. So ways into things, just as many things as we can cram into. Is it an hour and 45?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a good chunk of time.
So yeah. Basically as many kind of interesting techniques to turn that kind of the curse of trying to recreate bad telly.
Mm.
Our students, it makes them feel safe. Mm. They might not have seen any non-naturalistic ways of working that they feel they can access. So it's sort of finding a way to make sure that we start from where they are and then drip feed in techniques and offers that hopefully feel fun and give them a safe alternative to pedestrian linear drama.
So you're going to bring your magic toolbox.
Yeah.
With you on the day.
I mean, I really, Carl, I really wish I had like a literal magic toolbox.
Mm.
It's just going to have to be the magic toolbox of my brain that becomes the magic toolbox of your brains. But just loads of offers and loads of testing stuff out together in a room full of like-minded people.
Yeah, that'll be great. I can't wait, Kerry.
Yeah, it's going to be lovely.
Thank you so much for your time today.
You're so welcome. What a total pleasure. I just want to just say to anyone who's listening to the podcast, I know that at the moment it is incredibly hard to do the job that you're doing. I just want to say thank you and love and solidarity, because these are trying and testing times, and your young people are so lucky to have you. Just that really, and mostly because I have such admiration for the people who I meet when I'm working. And I don't know, it can be very tough because sometimes you're by yourself.
Kerry, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you ever so much for your time today. And I look forward to your workshops in January, and I look forward to everything that's going to come in the future. Yeah. And I can only recommend you wholeheartedly to all my colleagues out there. So get in touch with Splendid Theatre, get them into your school.
What a fantastic conversation, with a final message that we know will mean a lot to drama teachers up and down the country. If you want to connect with Kerry and see what Splendid are up to, you can follow them on Twitter @team_splendid. We hope you'll be able to join us on January 13th at Masque Mayflower Studios in Southampton for the Illuminate Drama Teachers Conference, being organised in collaboration with us here at Open Drama UK. For more details, visit www.mayflowerstudios.org.uk. If you've enjoyed this month's episode as much as we hope you would, and you're in a position to do so, please support our podcast via Buy Me a Coffee. Go to www.buymeacoffee.com/halfhourcall to donate.